Hello and welcome back to the Couple's Guide to Stranger Things podcast. I'm Shan.
And I am a former shell of myself.
That's Tom. And we're joined today by a little special guest. Baby Emmy is here, if you can already hear the background noise of her drinking her bottle.
Yay for parenting life.
So we're just a couple of super fans who met through our love of Stranger Things.
And these two super fans who met through their love of Stranger Things have just watched the two most important episodes.
You've already given it away.
Oops.
The jig is up. Yes, we couldn't help ourselves. We have just watched Chapter 8, The Mind Flayer, and Chapter 9, The Gate.
But first, we're going to talk about the Mind Flayer.
Because if we talked about both, this episode would be
6 hours.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, 6 hours about, give or take.
Right.
Shall we dive in?
Like the party did. Into the tunnels.
Okay, I'll give you that. Let's go.
Let's go.
Well, that was a brilliant point, Emmy.
Yeah, honestly, you're the insight we needed in this podcast, aren't you?
Definitely. So yeah, as you've just heard, Emmy is with us. Probably not for too long because she's due... Oh, okay. She is due a nap soon. But she also watched Chapter 8, The Mind Flayer, and wanted to share her opinion.
Yes, exactly. And honestly, I think we might need to keep her awake because she's clearly the one with the most brains here.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. So we begin chapter 8.
How are we supposed to stay in focus on this?
Tom's trying to stay serious while Emmy chews his finger off.
You mean a baby Demogorgon?
Yeah, we have a Demi. What?
A Demi Bemogorgon.
We have a baby Demogorgon. I was going to go in the studio as if we can afford a studio.
Oh, one day.
We could be in a studio for all anyone knows.
Yeah, I'm sure it's this echoey.
Yeah. In the studio with us today is a baby Demogorgon to explain their part in season 2.
Ah, are you Dart in disguise?
Don't say we don't get exclusive interviews.
Boom, there we go. I think we're the only ones who ever... Well, that's what exclusive means, Tom. Don't mind me.
So let's get to the episode. Yeah?
Yeah?
You're right. That's what happened first. So we start off in the lab. We're back to...
This is going so well.
We're back to Hopper and Dr. Owens, Sam. And it's crazy because you go straight back into the action. And this chapter... like there was steam coming off my fingers writing notes.
Yeah, that's it. At this point, I think Stranger Things has always done this. At the later episodes, it's just constantly cutting from scene to scene to scene because the group splits up constantly.
Yeah.
And so it's having to show everyone doing everything at the exact same time.
Yeah, and that is quite hard for note-taking, I won't lie. So I'm trying to group things together where I can, where it makes sense. But this is kind of what we said about last week. And if you're binge-watching, watching the Carly episode really does slow things down if you're doing a binge-watch, because this episode is full speed.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And like I said... in the last episode, I do agree with people saying it's very awkwardly placed, but nowhere else really worked.
No, like you said on the last one, where else would you put it?
Exactly.
It's just one of those. It has to go there.
It has to go there, because that's probably the best chronologically as well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it could go anywhere else, really. They just had to suck it up and throw it in.
Yeah, and like we said on the last one, if they use Carly as we hope they do in season 5, it'll all make sense.
Yeah, exactly. Which they've got to use her, or there will be pitchforks.
Yeah. So in this episode, we go straight into that action. Like I was saying, with Hopper and Sam, they are right in the centre, really, of what's coming next, which is the Demodogs are coming up from the tunnels. to near the gate, and Sam says about the glass, and he says, like, don't worry, it's polycarbonate, which I'm guessing is extremely strong.
It's supposed to be.
Well, they shatter that glass like a piece of paper.
I thought you were going to say they shatter that glass like a piece of glass.
That might have sounded better. So, of course, they get through, and it's literally a race now to get up higher. And like we were saying, why did people use the elevator?
Like you said, especially after season one, they should know
yeah.
how slow that door closes.
Yeah, I was saying you would have thought they would have made the doors close a bit quicker, considering season one starts with a lab worker being eaten in the elevator.
Yeah, although it comes from above the elevator, so...
It does, like, to be fair.
Did it get into the shaft and then through the maintenance hatch?
Or it was already in there and it somehow, like, tucked itself up, I don't know.
It's hiding on the ceiling like a proper spy film.
I was thinking Spider-Man, to be honest.
Okay.
That's how I can picture it in my head. So everything's happening. Sam sounds the alarm and Mike is, you know, screaming. He knows what's going on. He's yeah. not stupid. And
well, that's it. He's trying to warn them.
Yeah. And we get, like, a lovely treat of Noah's acting again, because Mike is screaming, you know, like, you need to put Will to sleep. And Will is just screaming.
Let me go. He's lying. He's lying.
He's lying. He's lying. He's lying. He's lying. He's so, like, high-pitched.
He is, like, honestly, I can't imagine how sore Noah's voice must have been after this.
It's quite traumatising, isn't it? Because there's such, like, a desperation and an anger and
yeah.
fury in Will.
Exactly. That's it. It's like...
We know that's not Will, basically.
You know it's not Will. No. Exactly. And I think... Well, this is the point that Joyce's decision... is based on her saying, right, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
And, yeah, clearly Will's mind is all foggy because good old Henry in the back, well, I say in the back, at the forefront of Will's mind now.
Yeah.
He can't pull that face out of the memories. He's like, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute, lady. I just need to go search the archives.
Yeah, and you can see that in Will's face. Like, you can see his eyes searching. And even, like, I love even the small details. Like, his jaw. Like, he's, like, trying to find the words. And he's, like, trying to get his lips around the name and everything. It's, yeah. like, really smart.
Yeah, honestly, he really does blow it away this season. And probably props to all the directors as well. Because, obviously,
yes.
you know, the actors have got a... pull it out the bag, sure, but I imagine many of the little details we see come from directors saying, oh, we could do a bit of that.
Yeah.
And then maybe a bit of this too.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm just going to very briefly talk about season three, how we kind of slate some of the writing of season three, some of the delivery of season three. Season two, you can't slate the writing, you can't slate, like you said, the direction of scenes.
Yeah.
Season two is... and season one, especially, are where everything was right. Like, everything yeah. was in place with production.
Exactly.
And direction of actors and everything. And, yeah.
That's so it. And it just goes to show...
We've got to give them their dues.
Yeah, it just goes to show how drunk on money they were for season three. Because everyone was putting money in. Netflix just threw pretty much their entire stock at the show.
Yeah, there's a lot of sponsorship in it.
And a lot of sponsorships, like big names getting involved. But season one and two, it was still this baby show that only a few people had heard of, really.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it was getting fame, but it was nowhere near the fame it is now by any stretch of the imagination. And it's just, it goes to show when you're doing it out of passion, always wins out of when you're doing it for money.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And... along the lines of what you were saying, yeah, with season one and two, that's why I always say they merge together in my mind.
Yeah.
Like,
mine too.
They are basically together a, what's that, 17 episode season together. That's yeah. it. One and two. I can't have one without the other. Really?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I wouldn't be able to choose between them. They are like one entity.
Exactly. But that's it. We both got into the show after both seasons had released.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank God.
I know, I couldn't have coped with the wait between season one to season two. Oh my God.
No. I mean, yeah, that was only 1 year compared to now we're pretty much getting to our...
Yeah, but 1 year of not knowing if Elle's alive or dead.
I know, that would be torturous, but I mean, imagine if we had that kind of cliffhanger on season 4.
Oh, God. I know, I couldn't bear it.
Honestly, we're going to be in our 60s before season 5 releases.
Yeah. So, and we'll probably be in our 60s by the time we actually finish our podcast rewatch.
Yeah. That's it. We're going to be finishing this on our deathbeds.
Oh God, don't say that. So Hopper gathers up Will at this point. Like Joyce has said, yeah, put him to sleep. Hopper gathers him up and they, together with Sam, Joyce and Mike and Bob, hide in the security room and all the cameras, all the lights go off. And it's like a very dramatic scene before our credits roll. Opening credits, I should say. And then we go from that to Billy. And it's such an interesting scene, isn't it? Because he's getting ready to go out. And we don't think it's possible to find someone as evil as Billy. And then we meet his father.
Yeah, exactly. And you can really see where Billy gets all of his rage from.
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of understand it see Neil.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know his name, but I feel like the actor who plays Neil and obviously Dacre, who plays Billy, they must have worked together really nicely because they, like, you can see Billy in Neil. Like, even small gestures,
yeah,
that's how Billy acts. Like, later on, it's how he acts to Lucas, and it's already been how he acts to Max. Like, that kind of almost, like, whispered voice of threat,
yeah,
and the way he shoves him up against the wardrobe. It's very similar to how later on he shoves Lucas up against the cabinet.
Like father, like son. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. He's clearly learned a lot of the way he is from his father, as any child would.
Yeah. And that's the thing, it's like, at the end of that scene, like, you know, Neil is like, you will go find your sister, and, you know, you're not going out, and, you know, says inappropriate words and things like that, and Billy is pretty much in tears.
Well, that's it, he's trying his best to stop them, obviously, because he has to be this macho strong man.
Yeah.
But you can't. No. And that's it, he has to... Pretty much, it's sort of that line of having to punch a wall to feel like a man again.
Yeah.
Pretty much does have to thump whatever it is, like the cupboard next to him or whatever it was.
Yeah. And it just explains a lot about Billy's character.
It really does, exactly. It shows you it's not out of nowhere. It's not just who Billy is. It's created by Neil.
But if anything, it also shows that Billy's probably more dangerous than ever because he's going after Max now with an added hatred and anger of, you just got me in trouble with my father. You have just made me even more furious.
Yeah, very true.
So yeah, he's coming with even more anger. And then we go to... So we've got Dustin, Steve, Lucas and Max. I'm assuming they're walking home. They're walking, like, because... They're just walking along. I think the track, it's hard to tell with it being dark.
Yeah.
They're definitely going through the woods and stuff. And Dustin and Lucas argue about Dart. And doesn't Dustin say, because I was trying to write so many notes, doesn't he say something like, I thought he was my friend, or he was trying to come home or something like that, about Dart?
He missed me. He just wanted to come home or something like that.
That was it. He just wanted to come home. He missed me. And that's it. Dustin has still very much got affection for Dart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I suppose if you've had a dog and then you grow attached to it and then suddenly you find out it's this beast from the Upside Down, it would be a bit hard to let go, I suppose.
Can't say I can relate to that situation.
I mean, I've never experienced it, but it's like, just imagine if one of your dogs suddenly grew up to become a demon dog.
I mean, he pretty much did, and so did your dog.
I suppose you have a point.
So maybe we can sympathise with you, Dustin, after all. So Dustin and Lucas are arguing about Dart, really. And it's at this point, though, that Steve hears the sounds of... I've put up demodogs or danger? There's a lot of noise coming which they discover is from the lab.
Yeah, exactly. And I love Max's line of, why are we following the sound?
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, it is quite brave, really, that they are going towards the sound, considering what they've just experienced.
Exactly. It's like, they should be expecting it to be Demodogs.
Yeah.
And literally, they're walking headfirst into it. It's like, what are they expecting?
Yeah, and they see the lab through binoculars, and Steve says, you know, about the Demodogs, are saying they're going home. And again, despite that, they still make their way to the lab.
Yeah, exactly. I know they're being really silly by following it.
You're right,
they?
Curiosity killed the cat, so they've got to be careful.
No, Dart killed the cat.
That is true. So, we are back at the lab. Obviously, a lot of the action is happening at the lab. And the system needs to be reset. And only Bob the Brain can do this.
I mean, like you said, maybe Mike could as well.
I said,
but,
yeah, or possibly Mike.
But I don't think they're going to risk Mike going all that way.
It is a funny moment, isn't it, though? Because Bob and Mike are there talking computers, and Hopper says, like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that's when Mike's like, it's a programming language.
Although, to be fair, teach Hopper, that's me every day when Tom talks about computers.
I like, love the way Hopper's like, oh, you're right, teach me it. And he's like, okay. And Bob, it's like, all right then, shall I teach you French while I'm at it?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You're not learning that in 2 seconds. And to be fair, in the real world, Bob, you would not have been able to do that in that 2 second space you had. That's not how this works.
I mean, I disagree because it's Bob, but Tom comes from the point of, I won't go into details because obviously private lives, but Tom works in the computer industry. And not just works in it, has a huge passion for it, and you always have, haven't you?
That's it. It's like,
so this is your language.
Exactly.
The language that Bob speaks, you speak it too.
That's it. And it's like, unless he's reading a manual of how all the gates are wired into the computer system and all of that, you're not making that up on the spot.
You don't know Bob's midnight reading could be all about.
Are you about to tell me that Bob actually installed it all in the lab for them?
You never know. I feel like, sorry to go off topic, but it's not too much off topic. I feel like this whole radio building that we're seeing in set pictures for season 5, I just feel is going to have had some sort of link to Bob. I just feel like
sense.
It's a nod to him.
Especially with the first shadow.
Yeah, because as we've said before, and it's no secret, I don't think, in the first shadow, obviously Bob has hosts the radio station. Radio show, I should say. So, yeah, I'm sure it's going to have some sort of link to Bob, like a nod to him at the very least.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you never know. He is maybe immersed more in the Hawkins than we even know.
Well, he did set up the AV club.
He did. And this is the thing. Bob is very brave, even at this point, because he says that he'll go reset it, which not a lot of people would do. They'd be like, oh, let's just, you know,
we've all got to
wait it out or something until the army get here.
Or let's all go, or, you know, Hoppy, you need to join me.
Yeah.
You're my bodyguard, sort of thing.
Exactly.
But no. No, he's just going himself.
Yeah, and he says, when he's alone with Hopper, he says, you know,
as soon as it's open, yeah.
Don't wait for me.
No, exactly. And, you know, Hopper agrees with that. He says, as soon as it's open, I'm getting him out. And I don't know if he then says, you know, I'll come back and get you after that. Or if
he doesn't. And that's it. Bob wants to make sure that Joyce and those kids especially get out.
Yeah.
And it is brave. He's incredibly brave for what he does there, because he's not a fighter.
He's not.
He's a thinker. He's not a fighter.
Exactly. I mean, as much of a thinker as he is, he did leave that gun there.
He did. But it's one of those things, like, would it have truly helped him in hindsight? Would he have been able to figure out how it works in enough time if something's running at him?
Well, there's that. And we've also seen that the Demodogs clearly don't really care about bullets.
Yeah, that's it. Because they have been shot quite a lot. And it just doesn't seem to do much to them.
No,
until
exactly.
It comes to Hopper later. But we'll talk about that later.
Plot convenience.
Yeah. So a lot is happening with the lab. Because obviously, all of that's happening inside, and then at the same time, Nancy and Jonathan are also arriving at the lab, and they're met by Steve and Dustin, Max and Lucas, And in the background, we can all hear those screeches of the Demodogs.
Yep.
I always chuckle, though, at this moment where they're trying to get into the lab.
And let me try, Jonathan.
Yeah. The security gate obviously isn't working. No power's on yet. And
well, the power's come back, but Bob hasn't written his little program yet.
Yeah. And Jonathan's just pressing the button. Yeah, just is like, move aside, I can do this. This is my area. Almost a bit like Bob and Mike compared to a Hopper.
Well, this, I mean, come season three, after Dustin's been to Camp Nowhere.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he's been doing.
Absolutely. So they do, you know, they manage to get in all down to Dustin.
It's all Dustin's, yeah, all Dustin's work. And I'm sure he's 100% confident in believing that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all just so fast paced because we go back to Bob doing his thing, doing the things that you think would be impossible in that time period.
I mean, how quick is he typing? How does he know which... All right, you want basic talk. How does he know what he's poking and peeking on that computer to get gates to open and sprinklers to fire and
poking and peeking?
They are official terms in the basic, at least Commodore basic world.
Poking and peeking.
Yep, you poke a location in memory, you peek at a location in memory, and that's it. You literally have to write the bytes into memory one by one. So
what?
exactly.
So, what do you mean?
So how is Bob slapping up a program that then presents him a neat menu? Like, that's plot convenience.
Bob the Brain, remember?
Plot convenience.
Or he just put the system in.
Yeah. Or that. Or they did the smart thing and saved the program to a disk or something. That would be intelligent. Because they have got floppy disks. Or tape.
Maybe. We'll never know.
No, because Bob's dead.
Yeah. Spoiler. Not really spoiler. Yeah, literally, the next thing I put was, damn the broom. Yeah, poor Bob, he's trying to get his way back with the help of Sam, because now that the cameras are back up, he is leading his way and is relatively successful.
Yeah, exactly. Sam being the eyes in the sky, if you will.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I got distracted by the baby, to be honest with you.
Likewise. I'm being deaf stared.
Yeah. Daddy's getting stared down by Emmy.
Yep. And now she's looking at my hand like, ooh, that looks tasty.
Yeah.
Bob's on his way out. He's forgot the gun. And yeah. Coming around a corner, and Sam just has to shout, stop!
Yeah.
Because around that corner is a prowling Demodog.
Yeah. And the only thing that makes me laugh is, it's like, I need you to get into this cupboard. And well, the Bob's like, why? And it's like, come on, Bob. Come on.
Literally, he says,
right, why do you think?
There's a door to your left. Right. That's a closet. Okay. I need you to get in it. What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Bob. Why right else now do you need to get in there?
Yeah, surely it's pretty obvious what's approaching if you're getting in into a closet.
Yeah. But he does get in, and that's all fine. But yeah, as I say, damn the broom.
That damn broom.
As he's trying to get out of there, he knocks over a broom, and he gets
the broom chased. Brought his doom.
Oh.
You can't see my cheesy poop-eating grin.
Oh, but you
can
probably
hear her eating my finger, though.
Emmy, can you take your dummy instead?
Leave all Daddy's the Americans finger have just said, what's a dummy?
A pacifier. Can you take that instead? You're passy. And pass on Daddy's finger.
No, I'm the dad. I make the jokes.
Sorry. I'm sorry, people. I'm getting so distracted. So, yeah, basically,
who?
I was trying to say Bob now dies. And it came out as...
Dob now buys.
Do you know what's crazy about this? Usually when we do this podcast, it's so late at night and we're doing it in the day. And I was thinking to myself, this is going to be our best quality podcast in a while because we're both actually awake. And no.
No, we're just that mentally damaged. It turns out it's not tiredness. It's not being drunk on lack of sleep. We're just genuinely this stupid.
Pretty much. But yes, let's get back and try my best to focus. Bob does get into the atrium, like the almost the exit.
Yeah.
And then he thinks he's safe and he stops.
He stops. And a lot of people debate whether that's on purpose. Like, I never thought this originally, but when people have said it, I do wonder if it's on purpose. He doesn't have a face that looks like it is. But people say he probably knows that those dogs are going to break through those doors. And if he runs towards the door, what's the guarantee that the dogs are going to go for him and not Joyce or Mike or Will? And so he's purposely leaving himself right in front of those doors so they go for him and they can get away.
But I'm sure, I know we literally just watched it, but I'm sure they're all out of the door. It's just Joyce holding back for him.
But... you could say if he's running towards the door, then they're leaving the doors open, and the chances are, but by the time they can react, it gets through that door and gets everyone.
Personally, I don't agree with that theory. I think he's been terrified from the basement up, and he thinks he is finally safe.
Well, that's it. He sees the love of his life.
With relief at her.
Yeah, I personally don't believe that theory either. It's just, I just thought I'd bring it up for those who believe it, because plenty of people have theorised that.
And he's probably, like, proud of himself in that moment, that, oh my God, I've done it. Yeah. You know, I've got us out of here, all of us. And unfortunately, he does not get out.
Nope.
And he has a gory death, and the thing is, Sean Astin asked for that gory death, which I love.
Yeah, that's it. That's such a Sean Astin thing, isn't it?
He was like, oh, I want, like, guts and this. And he wanted it to be even worse, didn't he? Like,
he wanted to be
choking on blood and all sorts of stuff.
You do see him coughing a bit, but I don't think any blood comes out of his mouth.
He
wanted all the realism.
Yeah, he did. And I can't remember if it's the writer or the producer. You think it might be the producer.
I'm pretty sure it is.
But she is the demon.
Yeah, on top of Sean Astin, like, lifting her arm up like that and just clawing into his side.
Yeah.
And all of that.
Because that's it. We've seen the behind the scenes of that. I'm pretty sure it's beyond Stranger Things.
I'm sure it's in there,
I've seen it from and heard about it from. We've seen all that. And it is interesting when you see her, like, dressed up as well and how she becomes the Demodog.
I don't think she's even dressed up. They CGI the Demodog over her.
Well, she's definitely... No, she's not, like, in a... I don't mean she's dressed as a Demodog, but, like, it's interesting to see it going from her to a Demodog is what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you say, that raised arm of the Demodog, seeing that being her arm and, just good to know. And if you haven't, I'm sure you would have watched it if, you know, you're listening to our podcast, but obviously it's a bit out of date now because they only did it for season two, but...
Which is so silly.
It is silly, but beyond Stranger Things... I'm 99.9% sure it's still on Netflix, but if not, I'm sure there's probably other ways to find it. And give that a watch because it's really interesting.
It is a proper behind the scenes for season two. And
they should have done it for all of them. I agree. It is upsetting.
It is devastating that they didn't go through with that show.
It amazes me that they didn't do it for like season three when, like you say, they were chucking so much money at it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they ran out of money by that point. They'd used it all up.
Yeah.
So, you know, all this has happened. They've managed to meet up with Jonathan and Nancy and get everyone back to the buyer's house now. And, you know, everyone's kind of in shock, as you can imagine.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. They've pretty much all just witnessed Bob's death.
Yeah. And Mike and Harper already arguing.
Yep. You have no idea what you're going into, Hopper.
No, because Mike, you know, he wants to get back out there. He wants to fight. And Hopper very much wants to keep them all safe. And in my malevolent mind, he wants to keep Mike safe for multiple reasons, you know, aka to avoid the wrath of L.
Exactly. So I said, if he...
Sorry I've been away so long. Also, I got your boyfriend killed by a demodog. Don't think it'd go down very well.
Yeah, I think someone's neck would probably snap.
Very possible.
If not more.
But there is a tender moment as well, though, between Joyce and Hopper. There's absolutely no words, and it's just a beautiful moment, though, where she is clearly grieving. She's in shock. She's crying. She's sat. I can't remember if he's put the blanket over her or if she has.
Yeah.
But she's sat with a blanket over her, and he just sits on the floor in front of her, and he doesn't say anything. But it's almost like, just like protection for her, really.
Yeah, exactly.
To just give her, ironically, even though he's there, it's almost like protection to give her space. Because, like, if someone else walked in, he'd be like, just leave it for now. Just let her have a moment.
Exactly.
He's like her bodyguard, really. It's like his presence is protective. I just really like that moment. I think it's a really, like, tender moment.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And, you know, such a small moment, but it's just something that sticks out to me, to be honest. And while that is happening, Mike is trying to rally everyone together. You know, they discuss Bob.
Well, that's how Mike starts. He says, did you know Bob is the original founder of the Hawkins AV Club?
Do you think that Mike... kind of, I'm trying to think of the word, not idolise Bob, that's not the word.
I think he respects him.
Yeah, probably respected him and was probably like, when Will told them that, oh, my mom is dating this Bob newbie, like I could imagine Mike being a regular customer at Bob's store and being like, oh, but Bob's the one who did this, and, you know, like being quite excited.
Yeah, I could imagine that. If he already knows that, if it's not a case of him finding out because Joyce is dating him.
Yeah.
Which I could probably imagine them finding that out from... what's his face now? Scott. Mr. Clark.
Yeah. Or even from Bob himself, because I could imagine... because the party are always together, like if they're hanging around Wells and they see... Bob isn't one to be shy. Like, he would be like, oh, hi, boys. And they'd probably get chatting and he'd be like, oh, did you know I was the, you know, original family?
Yeah, if they're ever talking about the AV club in the house, then he'd probably mention it and be like, oh, I created that.
Yeah. I imagine that Mike would have had a huge respect for him. And
yeah.
And it's nice that they have, you know, that moment. And they get talking, of course, about the mind flayer and about it having a hive mind. And like Mike says, his army, and makes him realise that they are all linked.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. They start talking about the fact that it's a hive mind and all that. And then Dustin likens that to the mind flayer in their Dungeons & Dragons handbooks.
Yeah.
And that's obviously where it gets its name. Yeah. Right there and then.
Carry on.
Oh, I was going to say obviously you've got Hopper saying, you know, this is all just a kid's game. None of it's true, but it's pretty much spot on so far, other than raising an undead army.
Well, this is it. This is what I was going to say, actually. Because Dustin's explaining to Hopper and the others the concept of the Mind Flayer, what that would mean and everything. And... yeah, Hopper's like, well, how do you destroy something that uses mind control? And Dustin says, oh, well, you'd summon an undead army. And it just kind of put something in my head. And I thought, do you know what? We're not even just talking about the Mind Flayer right now, but how to destroy him. In a way, we're kind of talking about Vecna, because he uses mind control. That's how he kills, you know?
Well, that's how he's controlling the Mind Flayer.
Exactly.
That's how he's controlling the demogorgons.
Yeah, or the Mind Flayer's controlling him. We don't really know.
Well, the thing is, we see Henry shape it.
Yeah, but that's in the theatre, and I know that.
No, it's in the show.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, you're right.
Yeah,
sorry,
we see it in the show.
When he first goes into the Upside Down.
Yeah, when he's in the Upside Down, he stumbles across this cloud in the sky, this black swirling cloud. It's just there swirling around until he starts to shape it into... your favourite insect.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's like, if in the first shadow, if the Mind Flayer is already inside of Henry from when he's younger,
is that the Mind Flayer, though?
But if anything, we really don't know. Is the Mind Flayer shaping the shadow into his own representation. I don't know. It's hard to know. We're not going to know until season 5.
If we're even going to know then. Yeah, you watch exactly. them, leave it to a spin-off.
That's it. We've got all these breadcrumbs of different things. But yeah, it just kind of made me think about... I'll be honest, what came to my mind was when he said summon an undead army to, you know, fight against him. It did make me think of Eddie. It made me think of two things. It made me think of Eddie, and then it reminded me of the movie Hocus Pocus, which I'm pretty sure was 80s as well, where there is a character in that called, I think it's Jack, and he's the undead, and he basically comes back and helps the main characters defeat the witches. He's on their side. And it just made me think of Eddie, and if there's a way of him coming back and helping. I know that's very, very out there, but...
So the heroes of season 5 are going to be a zombified Eddie and Barbara.
Oh, maybe not Barb. I only say that because it's been quite a while, and bless her, she didn't look her best.
But then Eddie has been eaten by bats.
Yeah, but he wasn't eaten. He was chewed at.
So eaten.
He's very much whole, but Barb was like, she wasn't looking good.
I highly doubt Eddie looks very good. We haven't seen him.
But the thing is, there's hints, isn't there, of Eddie returning in one way or another. I assume if he's going to, it's most likely going to be in a similar situation to how Billy returned in season 4. But yeah, because...
Did he return in season 4?
Yeah, he taunted Max, remember?
Billy.
Yeah. God, it shows, doesn't it, how much we've watched season 4.
I know. So she goes to his grave.
Yeah.
She's talking as if...
He's there, remember? He's got blood on him, and he's like, Max.
See, I can remember Vecna taunting her there, but I couldn't remember it being an image of Billy.
Yeah, Billy's there, and he says that she's the reason he's dead and all
this
stuff.
She wanted it to happen and all that. That's it. I remember the words. I just thought it was Henry saying them rather than...
I mean, in a way, it is Henry, but no, Dake is there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like you say, we need to rewatch these seasons.
We do, and we're getting there. We are getting there.
Well, that's it. We've finished season 2 in terms of rewatching.
Yeah. So I wonder if they're going to use Eddie in a similar way, because the actor who plays him, he's being a bit cheeky. He's doing a bit of a Matthew Modine, like when he's being asked, he's like, oh, I could imagine that happening, but I could also imagine it not. He's teasing every time he's getting asked.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'd be surprised if they don't have flashbacks or whatever, or visions of Eddie, especially Dustin.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably the only person Dustin really has to have visions of.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't think he's going to have visions of Muse. So, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Muse, but no, I don't think so.
Considering how much he seems to care in season 2, I don't think he's going to suddenly care in season 4.
Muse is going to be 5, actually. You didn't care about my death.
And then Muse just grows into a demodog.
Yeah, stranger things have happened.
Now.
So, I'm trying to get back to the point. I deviated so much there. So, next on the agenda then is they're trying to get information out of Will. They're getting the shed ready.
Yeah.
Because they don't want him to recognise it, so they're covering it all up. They're trying to make it as... you know, secret as possible.
Yeah, and it does work.
It does. For a while.
Until a certain ring-a-ding-ding.
Yeah. And this is the thing. Mike says it about the spy, and, you know, they're trying to hide it so that the spy can't see and everything. And I personally think that at this point, they think that the spy is, like, at the back of the mind and Will is at the front of the mind, that, if that makes
that's
sense.
That's it. That's how it was before the lab scenes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
while they're talking about it through school or the crazy together scene and all of that, Will is still in control, and Henry, or the Mind Flayer, whatever you want to call it, is in the background.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I'm saying this despite the scenes where Joyce is like, who am I? And he's like, your mum. I don't know why, but I just have this feeling that they think that when Will... Sorry, my lip is currently...
Emmy is currently trying to rip Mummy's lips off.
Yeah, my lip is currently under her fingers.
Leave your mother alone.
Oh my goodness me. I know I talk a lot, but I kind of have to because Daddy makes me write all the notes.
That's the point of a podcast, is talking.
But so I have to lead all this conversation, miss.
And then I just steal them.
Yeah, pretty much. so yeah, I don't know why, but I just have this feeling that they think that when Will comes around, he's gonna be Will for a bit before the spy takes over, and that they might be able to get some information out of him, but just immediately he's the spy.
Yeah,
immediately. It's like it's this sudden, you can see this realization in Mike's face that
Will is basically gone.
Yeah, Will is gone, or he is so far back. It's going to take more than just talking. It takes music and all sorts of stuff.
Well, that's it. It starts from, obviously, Joyce, then Jonathan, then Mike talking about their memories with Will. And that's enough to get him to just tap out here in Morse code. You know, that's enough to wake Will up in the background. And it's like Will has control of his hand without Henry or the Mind Flayer knowing.
Yeah.
And then that's it. That, seeing him tap Morse code, gets them to realise, although Will isn't in control of his own body, now that he's able to tap Morse code out, they just need to keep throwing things at him to get him out.
Yeah.
And that's it. It just shows making him emotional is how he managed to gain control, as I say, just a hand, but that's enough to communicate.
Yeah, and one of the bits of information that they throw at him is about his birthday.
And that's it. We have just found out they have not dubbed over that yet, so Will's birthday still is March the 22nd.
Yeah. And for those of you who know, in season 4, Will's birthday happens, but clearly no one, including Will, seems to know about it.
Will has forgotten his own birthday. Joyce has forgotten her own son's birthday.
Yeah.
Mike, the Suffer brothers, have forgotten Will's birthday.
Yeah.
And that's it. We'll obviously mention that when we watch season 4, but...
Yeah,
that's it. I've been looking forward to see if they went with their guns, because they did. I don't know if they said they would or they might.
Yeah.
But they did say that they could just dub over Joyce saying March and have her say May, because that's pretty much the closest month that would basically match with her lips.
Yeah, yeah. But they haven't March. Yet. No.
But no, they apparently have not done that. So
poor Will. It's not like he hasn't been through enough.
Yeah. So at the moment, it's still canon that everyone forgets his birthday.
Yeah.
Honestly, what an embarrassing thing.
I know. But, you know, no one's perfect, I suppose.
No, not at all.
At least they haven't forgotten something a bit more dramatic, like in Game of Thrones when there's a coffee cup on the table with Daenerys. Just a coffee cup right in front of her.
It took me a moment to realise why that would be such a bad thing. But now I get it.
Yeah. Just a takeaway coffee cup. in the middle of whatever century this is meant to be.
And that made it into the show.
Yeah.
I haven't watched Game of Thrones yet, for people who have now just... I heard you all collectively gasp. That broke through space and time. That gasp did. And I know I need to fix that.
I don't think it's as popular as you think. I loved Game of Thrones. Except for the ending. We don't talk about the ending.
Just like we don't talk about season 3. Yeah. We don't talk about season 8.
Except for the coffee cup. Yeah, I'll show you a picture later. It's funny.
I think I might have seen it before.
Probably.
I can't remember if it's Game of Thrones, but I've seen like a show that's set like in that kind of time. And in the distance, there's a mountain. You can just see modern trucks driving across this mountain.
It's that kind of similar thing, how it happened. But yeah, so there are shows that have done worse, I suppose.
I don't know. I think forgetting one of your own characters' birthdays is probably up there. I'm sorry, Suffer Bros, but it's probably up there.
Yeah, I think so. And this is the thing. So getting back to Will, like you say about... they're trying to get through to him with emotions, that, you know, they're telling beautiful stories like Mike's story, you know, again, a big plus to Finn. Like, Finn's acting in season 2 is fantastic.
Yeah.
He just says so much with his eyes. It's so, it's just beautiful.
Absolutely.
And Will is able to get through with Morse code that that Hopper picks up on.
Yeah.
It's him saying, first of all, here, and then when they go back in and they, you know, have the music on, Jonathan gets the music on and everything, he is able to spell out, close the gate.
Yeah, just close gate, and that's it. I remember when I first watched this, when they said close gate, I was like, what, the gate to the house because a load of demon dogs are about to break through? I genuinely thought they meant like a physical like fence gate rather than the big gaping gate in the lab.
Close the garden gate!
And then when it cut to that gate... I'm sick of telling you. When it cut to that gate, I was like, oh, you idiot. Of course they mean that.
Oh, dear. And then... it's, you know, it's all going well in that sense, and then the phone rings.
Yeah, as soon as they translate it, the phone is ringing. And
they're like, he can't possibly recognise that noise.
No, I mean, how many phones have the same ringtone? It's just a bell being hit.
But he does, all right.
He does indeed. And that's it, they're all on their way. Will sends, well, not Will, the Mind Flayer of Vecna, sends that homing beacon to every single demodog.
Yeah. But we did say, like, we wonder who was calling. Because you thought of the most logical answer. I was like, oh, maybe it's Karen. Maybe it's the demodogs calling their daddy.
Well, the Karen one probably is logical. You know, it could just be...
just checking up on you. Haven't heard from you. You okay?
Well, it could be... do you think Billy might be at the Wheeler House at this point?
Possibly. Because she might be like, oh, let me ring them for you.
Yeah, exactly. Let me ring them for you. I'll see if they're there.
See if they're there.
So it could be Karen.
Yeah, it could be.
But yeah, I was wondering if it's whoever Hopper was trying to call for military backup like earlier on.
Yeah.
But no, I think I'm going to go with it being Karen while... While Billy's there
eating cookies.
Yeah, exactly. Calling them cookies feels so wrong. I know that's the American thing.
Do you know what? Speaking of Karen, I'm like, oh, did I forget to write that? But actually, that's because it's in the next chapter where we see Billy. But timing-wise,
that
very much could be...
yeah.
Billy.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, so that happens next episode. There we go. That I knew something would blur between the two episodes.
Yeah, because we were very naughty and couldn't help ourselves.
No, we knew we wouldn't.
It was the reunion, people. It splits in between them both. There's no way we're not completing the reunion.
No, exactly. Just like season 1 and 2 blur together in my mind and belong with each other, these two episodes are one episode.
Yeah. Exactly. Do you know what? I completely lost what I was, even with notes. Oh, and do you know why that is, people? Because literally, the rest of my notes are just, in capitals, the reunion, the candlestick, heart, Eyes.
Yep, Michael Heart Eyes Wheeler.
I don't need to say any more, do I?
No. No, that's all we need to say. The reunion. You know what we're talking about. You can see it in your head.
Oh, because how that's all happened is... Sorry, we're skipping slightly because I got excited. Not too much far in advance, though. But yeah, because of that phone, like you say, the Demodogs have come in. So everyone's getting into the house.
Yeah.
And I'm
grabbing a defence. The candlestick.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with that, Mickey boy?
So yeah, so Mike has got a candlestick. It's like a Cluedo scene waiting to happen. And he hit the Demodog with a candlestick.
The Demodog in the ballroom. The Demodog looked at him and laughed.
Yes.
And then proceeded to eat him.
Yeah. Yeah. It wouldn't have gone well, Mike, I don't think.
You're so lucky your girlfriend's right outside.
He didn't even light the candle. Like, if he'd put maybe
there's no
some
candle in there.
Maybe
it's
if he'd
just
put a couple of tea lights in there.
Well,
light
they don't.
Well,
they
candles.
Don't like heat, so maybe he could have just yeah. held it up at the Demodog, like the power of Christ compels you.
Exactly. I figured that. Be gone. Be gone. Oh dear. But yeah, Mike doesn't have to worry because outside, unseen by us, those Demodogs are getting killed.
They're all getting slaughtered. You can hear every single one of them having their necks snapped or whatever. And then it all goes silent until one flies through the window.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, Elle, did you do that on purpose?
I'm not sure she did. I think it was... She was, you know, having to kill so many and probably just throwing them in whichever direction they're coming at her from. So that one was probably coming at her from that direction and she's just, you know, killed it and it's flown that way.
You think?
I think so, because what would she have to gain from smashing the window?
Well, the only thing I could imagine her doing that for...
Especially when she uses the door.
Yeah, is to basically say, right, it's me, don't shoot, sort of thing. Like, if a Demodog is dead flying through the window, that kind of gives you a hint that maybe that's not what's about to open the door.
Maybe.
But, yeah, I'm more along the lines of she probably did that accidentally.
And what was funny was, like, the moment that the chain starts to go, I was like, oh, they should all know who it is at this point. And you made a very good point, actually.
Yeah. Don't you remember Will running away and then the Demodorgon? The Demogorgon just does the exact same thing. Yeah. Pretty much, I'm pretty sure they could have just copy and pasted those scenes from season one with the chain sliding and the door unlocking and all of that.
Yeah,
because it's the same. It's the same door.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot that the Demogorgon could do that. To be honest, so I was like, oh.
I think the Duffer Bros might have as well.
Yeah, but to be fair, no one that's in that room knows that the Demogorgons could do that.
No, exactly. I doubt Will's mentioned that. I mean, maybe he has.
I wonder if. At that moment, I feel like Hopper would have known that was out. Yeah. I feel like he'd be like, uh-oh, I'm about to be in trouble.
Great, here we go.
Yeah.
For multiple reasons.
Trouble is coming for you, Hopper.
Yeah.
And that's it. We have... Oh, honestly, I've said this to you, haven't I? I can't count the amount of times I've seen that whole scene of the reunion. I can't count, but even to this day, hearing, like, the door open, the music starts to lift, and you start to see her feet walking in, my heart just, like, races, like, with anticipation, even though I know exactly what happens.
Yeah.
It's such a powerful moment.
It really is. Like,
oh, my God. It's, like, one of, for me, the best moments in Stranger Things altogether.
Yeah, like I say, the two most important episodes for this reunion, for everything else as well, but for this reunion,
yeah,
it's absolutely the most important episode combo
and
right here.
I don't know who does the music at this point.
It's anything official, like made for the show, has always been Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein.
This music is just so powerful.
They are so good.
It like almost brings tears to my eyes. It wells me up. It adds to the scene so beautifully. And, you know, she walks in and you see like all these individual faces of shock as to, obviously Max isn't stupid. I think she knows who this is from the stories.
Yeah.
But you can see everyone else's face of, oh my God, she's back.
She's alive.
Wow, she's alive. Yeah. Complete shock. And then you have Mike.
Yeah.
I can't talk about it without wanting to cry. He
has to come round from the back of Hopper.
His mouth is open.
Yeah. He's catching many flies.
It's like at first he wonders if he's seeing a ghost, I think.
Well, the thing is, he's been thinking that for this whole year.
Yeah.
Like he was saying with Will, it's like he's been seeing her at the corner of his eye. Or, you know, he might be in the basement.
Or senses she's there and
she's not. Yeah, he might be in the basement and then in the corner of his eye he sees her in the fort.
Mm.
Or something like that. And it turns out, she's sitting in there in void space watching you. And
I think he goes from that kind of, oh my God, is it her? Is it her? Am I seeing things? And then she captures his gaze and they stare at each other.
Yeah.
And her face as well. Like, these two deserve Oscars for this moment.
Yeah.
Like, her eyes widen, her eyes warm and her smile and his smile and his face. Honestly, like I've said to you, this scene does more for my fluffy heart than I can't even think of a comparison for me of anything I've ever watched that fills my heart, like overwhelms me as much as this scene.
Yeah.
And I'm just so like in awe of Finn and Millie's talent here. Like, at the time of filming this, they are young teenagers.
Yeah, exactly. They are, 13, 14.
Possibly around that age when they're filming it, yeah. And the emotion they give and the looks they give, I don't think they realised how incredible that is. And I know season 2 launched a lot of Byler ships, you know. But I think it just added a million ships to the Malevan fleet as well.
Yeah, absolutely. This, the love they have for each other, as scared of that word as Mike is, it just shines in this moment. Like, they can't hide it. It's like you said before, they both very much forget that there's anyone else in that room.
Yeah.
Right now, Mike and Elle to each other are the only people in that room.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, if we talk any more about that scene, it then leads into the next. And that's why we had to watch the rest. Because it just is, it's one segment, really.
Yeah, we always said if we were going to pause, then we'd watch the rest of the reunion, then pause the episode.
Yeah.
But no, we just watched them both because, like I say, they're just one super long episode.
Yeah,
that's the secret here. Season 2 is also 8 episodes.
Yeah.
See, the last one's just like 2 hours long.
Yeah. And it just, you know, I'm looking at the time of our podcast and we've done really, really well here.
We really have, considering what episode this is.
And honestly, I think that comes from, I'm so sorry, especially me, I know I'm a fast talker and I'm sorry if I have rushed through it, but I've got to say a sorry not sorry, because that is coming from a place of sheer passion.
Yeah.
And like I've said, we've both suddenly just got in the mood for writing, haven't we?
Exactly, which is why you really wanted to get this done in the day rather than wait until Harry's home from nursery.
And they're both in bed tonight, so that I can write and that you can write if you want to, because these are like the episodes that just ignite my passion so much for it. Like, I just can't put into words how much we love this show.
No, exactly. There are no words that really convey it, how much this show and these characters mean to us. Like, it's pretty silly how much it means to us.
Yeah.
But it just does.
I'm not embarrassed because...
No, neither am I.
Yes, there's the huge things that we found each other because of this show.
Yeah.
If we hadn't found each other, our son wouldn't exist. Our daughter wouldn't exist.
Exactly. You wouldn't be cradling her as she nearly falls asleep in your arms right now.
Yeah, exactly. We wouldn't be living together. And that is unbelievable in itself.
Yeah.
Very unbelievable.
But if anything, the passion for these characters in this show started before we got together.
It did. Like, literally,
we're together as a result of that.
Like, I just... I could bow down to everyone in Stranger Things, but I could really bow down to Finn and Millie for how they portrayed Mike and Elle, especially in this reunion scene, because for me, that was what got me into Stranger Things. Like I said before, in our first ever episode of our podcast, I had seen some YouTubes where it was saying about all the best ships, and they were voted number one in this YouTube edit, and it was a couple of their scenes from, I think, season one, and I was like, bloody hell, they're only young, and that is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, the way they've done that, and then watched it, of course, season one, season two, all in one go, and was just absolutely floored by this amazing chemistry, amazing acting, amazing show. And yeah, this scene for me is just the most important, because it didn't just, I don't even know how to put it, but like, it didn't just amaze me with the acting, but it ignited my fan fictions.
Yeah.
It was after this season that I was like, I need more.
Yeah, it was after this season. Obviously not this episode.
Yeah.
But it was after this season that I just didn't want it to end.
No.
I had no patience for season three, which was already confirmed by the time I'd watched this. But I just had zero patience.
Yeah.
And so this was the very first thing that made me think, okay, fine. I went past the stereotypes. Because that's it. All I'd heard of fan fiction was that it's your stereotypical,
smart,
you know what, yeah.
Mature content.
The disgusting variant where it's not part of a story, where it's just there for the sake of it.
Where it's underage and it's
exactly. It's just
extreme.
Yeah, exactly that. So that was very much the stereotype that I'd heard of, and I thought, surely there are people out there who just want to continue the story.
Yeah.
And continue that love they have for each other.
Yeah.
And yeah, absolutely. And I wonder which one was probably the best out there.
What, you expect me to be like, oh yeah, you're talking about me?
I damn well expect you to say those words.
No, there are some. I know My Life You Deserve did very, very well. I'm very, you know, happy with that. But there's so many amazing stories.
That's it. I'm not gonna lie at any point and say yours was the only one I read, because of course it wasn't.
It's not the only one I read.
I don't think it was the first.
No, it's not.
But
I was gonna say it's not the first I read. Of course it's not. I didn't read it.
But it's truly the one that, I've said this before and I mean it, every time I saw you uploaded, I'd be straight on it.
Oh,
so
it
was
lovely.
Along the lines of the main show, where I was dead to the world because I was just staring at my phone reading that.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I'll be honest, like on this podcast, I have mixed feelings over my story, The Life You Deserve, because, and I'm not sure if I really went into this or not, I think I did when we first talked about it on the first episode of our podcast, where, you know, we said where we were both coming from with Stranger Things. But this was a point where I was completely an anonymous writer. I, you know, just come from all this terrible stuff happening in my personal life, and I just finished season two, you know, so I had just experienced the traumas that poor Elle had gone through, and I was like, if I can't have the best life I deserve, I want to give her the life she deserves. And I just wanted to write this story that would have a happy ending and that would show her experiencing all the normal and beautiful and highs and lows in life. And of course that includes mature content, because that is life. That is a part of life.
It absolutely is. And that's one of the reasons I loved your story, not specifically for the smut, obviously, but the fact that it was just life.
Yeah.
You know, it was them growing up and going through life.
Yeah.
As a normal couple.
And I'll admit, there is some of the mature content right in that I do regret. I'll be honest, I do. If I could go back, or if I wanted to update the story, I would probably remove some of that, or at least make it not as explicit. Which, ironically, I don't know if people would like, because that is my most liked story. Like, yeah. Hundreds of thousands of people have liked it and followed it and on multiple platforms. I don't know if that would go down well, but for me personally, for how my life has changed now, I would amend it. But, you know, it's out there on the internet now, and it is how it is. But, funnily enough, I've just got to say, shame on the person, because I never got bad reviews about mature content, which I'm grateful for. I remember getting a bad review because I'd wrote a chapter where Elle starts her period. And it's not even graphic. And I've just got to say, not that this person will ever read this, hear this, but shame on you, because that is a completely normal part of a female's life. There's nothing we can do about it. It happens to most girls. So deal with it. Suck it up.
Yeah, buttercup. Exactly. And that's it. You know, there are some people out there who truly believe the lab might have made Elle sterile. But
I just remember this person was like, that's disgusting that you're writing about a period.
Yeah. And
it's like,
the thing is, like,
I'm
literally
writing a coming of age story of everything, some pretty dodgy stuff, and yet that's the thing that
that's
you complain about.
That's the one that gets you, yeah. And that's it. It's like, we know, like I say, Elle's gonna have to go through that at some point in her life. Do I think it's gonna be in the show? No. 100% no. But it's going to happen in her life, because the lab isn't going to make her sterile. They're going to want her to give birth to more superpower babies.
Oh, definitely. And I think, like, I don't know, I just feel like that would, I know they're not going to have it in a show because it's taboo, you know. This is what I'm fighting against, you know, things that are classed as taboo, you know, which shouldn't be. Things that happen to normal people that women and girls should not be ashamed of. And literally, I remember having it as a like a beautiful bonding between her and Joyce.
Yeah.
Because Hopper didn't really know how to act with it.
Exactly.
And
he's
so
never had to,
it was
so,
a moment
yeah.
for her and Joyce, you know, where they came together and everything. So, yeah. And I know that's completely off topic, but I just think anytime we've got to advocate for my women, I'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely. But otherwise, yeah. Now this evening's free for you to get on to writing.
Yay! Honestly, I have no regrets watching both those episodes, because it has fired me up.
Absolutely. There was no way we were watching 8 without 9, because they're one episode.
Yeah, definitely. But we will be back next week, and we will be discussing chapter 9, The Gate.
Yeah.
We're going to have to record it tomorrow, though, because otherwise my brain will be gone by next week.
You're not going to use it as an excuse to rewatch the episode, are you?
Oh, maybe. It is a good one.
It is.
Snowball, the rest of the reunion.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for joining us on our, I was going to say curiosity voyage, but our insanity voyage.
And apologies for any background noise, because we've had the windows open. So apologies for cars, apologies for outside noise, and apologies for babies.
Baby Demogorgon.
Who is fast asleep in my arms now.
Clinging onto your shirt.
Aw, bless her. Thank you very much from me, Tom, and Emmy.
Don't you mean the two slaves and the manager?
Yeah, the big boss.
Yeah.
With all her little chunky rolls.
With that dummy nearly falling out of her mouth.
Sorry, everyone, we're deviating again.
Right, bye then.
Bye!